And once again, time for another podcast with the Harrisburg Symphony. I'm Dick Strasser, talking with Stuart Molina in his living room about a concert coming up in mid-April, April 17th and 18th. And this one is called...
Life's Ever-Changing Tapestry.
And why is it called that?
Well, the idea of a tapestry, of course, I think it's an apt comparison to a piece of music, themes woven together, pieces of music. But I think it also refers to the Kevin Putz Symphony, which we're doing, which is all about changes, about how things can change in an instant profoundly.
Mm, very much. And what is the inspiration behind the symphony? Because its subtitle is...
The Island of Innocence. And I think you'll figure it out when I tell you that the piece was written in December of 2001. It's a piece that directly reflects on September 11th, 2001. Mm. And in this piece, Kevin, who's a very gifted young composer, has created in the opening section of the symphony a rose-tinted glasses kind of world, a world of innocence, naivete, and the music reflects that. It almost comes across as like movie music, very tonal, very beautiful, very warm, thickly orchestrated, with rising melodies coming through the strings. And then in an instant, everything changes. And, you know, some of our players have been asking, is that the moment when the planes crash? And it's like, well, it's not about that. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed
to... It's more of an emotional response, a reaction.
Exactly. Yeah. It's more about a paradigm shift. It's not so much a portrayal of the events of 9/11, but rather a sense of how things can suddenly change. And you have a rather anguished violin solo without the orchestra, and then you have kind of a replaying of the opening section, but in a disturbed world. Mm-hmm. Suddenly the tonality is a little more ambiguous. Suddenly the rising melodies in the orchestra don't have the settled, warm feeling that they had before, and you have strange figures going through the woodwinds that punctuate everything. And then this is followed by another violin solo, which is even more angular, more extended, more anguished. And then a final section, which I would describe on the one hand as hopeful. You do have a sense of a light shining through, but by the same token, a little bit ambivalent, a little bit fearful, a little bit anxious. And I think it's a beautiful comparison to the way our society changed. You had the moment of anguish, of course, and this protracted period of grief that we all felt. And then a more settled, you know, life can go on kind of a world, but life goes on in a different way and in a much less comfortable way. I think this is a magnificent work of music, and I think the audience is going to respond in a very emotional way to it because it's a very emotional piece.
Good. I know some of his music, and I heard what I would only describe as a jaw-dropping string quartet that was actually inspired by the events at the Columbine High School, which I thought, how could you, first of all, use something like that in a string quartet? And then, I mean, again, it is not a literal interpretation of the events, but an emotional response to what that meant in our society, the tear that it had put in our sense of well-being. How did you find this symphony? How did you come across it? Why did you decide to program it?
I found the symphony because he sent a sampler CD of his works. Mm-hmm. And I had heard his name mentioned quite a lot as one of this new generation of gifted composers who writes music for an audience's ear rather than for his own intellectual mm-hmm. curiosity. And so I listened to it, and I generally do, you know, as much as I can, as much as time allows. And there were two pieces that struck me, both of them inspired by 9/11. The first was a piece called Falling Bodies, which was inspired by falling bodies from the towers.
Very literal.
A much more literal thing, and yet the piece itself stood on its own. Mm-hmm. You could hear the piece and say, wow, what an interesting, wonderful piece of music. And then when you find out what inspired it, it gives you this kind of sinking feeling. Mm-hmm. This piece is a longer piece. It runs about 20 minutes or so. And so when we decided to do the Saint-Saëns cello concerto, which is a rather short cello concerto, I thought it would be balanced well by a more significant new work. And it's always wonderful when we can do new works. And this isn't a world premiere. It's been done at least a couple of times in Indianapolis and Cincinnati. But it's a piece that I'm happy to introduce to our audience, and I'm happy to be doing the works of this wonderful composer whose work I hope we'll do again. I got a lot of, after 9/11, I got a lot of scores and a lot of recordings of new pieces about 9/11, and you know, I hate to be skeptical, and I hate to be to look at things this way, but it almost seemed like everyone wanted to cash in on, oh, here's a moment where we can get our music played. This is a piece that reflects on it, but doesn't require it. Mm-hmm. You know, it could
it
just
transcends
as,
the whole idea.
Exactly, it could just as well be about any moment in time when something happens and things change, and I like that, and I think it's courageous to write pieces like this, and I in a sense I tip my hat to all of those composers who took on this very monumental, difficult historical event to grapple with, and.
It's very
and try
hard
to create art.
To express it abstractly and
exactly.
still be... I mean, it's like Beethoven's Fifth in a way. I mean, any of those...
Oh, of course.
Shostakovich Fifth, Tchaikovsky
yeah,
Fifth,
exactly.
all those fifths that are dealing with some kind of not tragedy, but I mean, fateful event in Beethoven's case, whatever it may be.
Absolutely.
But yet we don't have to know what that is
for the piece to
be appreciate it
exactly.
as a piece of music.
And yet knowing it does add a level of appreciation that you might not otherwise have. I will not hesitate before this concert to... tell the audience what this piece is about, because I do think that it does help appreciate a piece of music to know what was going on in the composer's mind.
Now, will the composer be able to be here for the performance?
Sadly, no. We invited him, and he's with another orchestra doing an actual world premiere, so I congratulate
Good
him.
For him.
And hopefully he'll be here the next time.
Yeah, sorry about that.
He's down at Peabody. I mean, he actually
He's
is rather close.
Away, yeah.
And I think he was really sad not to be able to come.
Yeah. I know this isn't the first time his music has been heard in Harrisburg, because Concertante did a world premiere of a piece of his.
Was it part of their...
Part of their series.
Their series.
And I think it was in... Well, it was in the spring of 2008, so it was after you had announced that this season would include a symphony of his. And so
well, it's
I thought,
funny
well,
how
good,
things work like that.
Find out more about this young man.
The same worked with Jennifer Higdon, where suddenly Lancaster and we and Market Square, all in a short period of time, were performing her works, and I'm thrilled about that.
Yeah, it's good to see new composers who are becoming part of the repertoire rather than once in a while you run across something like that.
That's
and
right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he's a very good, very solid, very listenable composer, but
Absolutely.
He has a lot of music to offer. So I'm looking forward to hearing the piece. In the context with the Brahms Symphony that's on the second half of the program, how do you balance the two in that sense and then decide to call your program in a marketing sense after the new piece, you know, rather than say, oh, we're doing Brahms second, it's a great chestnut, you know, you'll love it.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I do think that our audience is changing in a sense. I think that the idea of a new work is becoming interesting to our audience, and that's a very exciting development. I would say 10, 15 years ago, if we performed a piece by Bartok, people would shy away from the concert. Mm-hmm. And now we've done a number of new works, and generally the audience's response has ranged from, wow, you know, when we did Jennifer Higdon's percussion concerto, what an incredible experience, do that piece again next year, to a more, you know, moderate feeling of, well, thank you for sharing that with us. You know, I'm not going to run out and buy the CD, but I'm glad
the
I experienced Schulhoff. It.
Oh, exactly. The Schulhoff Symphony was one. I mean, that was a terrifying piece to listen to, and not easy to like on a first hearing, or maybe even a second hearing.
It's not a piece that you should like.
But the response to it was extremely positive.
Exactly. Although I did get one comment on my web page, which said something like, hated the Schulhoff. And my feeling there was, well, then I succeeded.
At least you got a reaction.
A real reaction, and a legitimate reaction, because it's a piece that doesn't make you feel good. It actually makes you feel awful.
Yeah. And there's a place for that in art, too.
Absolutely.
Brahms Second is not one of those pieces.
No, Brahms Second is the polar opposite.
It's one of the most joyous symphonies in the repertoire.
It is remarkable. And whenever I look at Brahms' symphonic output, I find it astonishing that he wrote four symphonies, which is a small number, I mean, compared to a lot of other composers. And each one is so unlike the others. I mean, you can't hear any part of Brahms' Second Symphony and mistake it for the first, third, or fourth. Mm-hmm. You know, the first symphony with its majesty, with its power, the second, just a world of serenity and beauty and joy and echoes of nature, and the third, a much more internal, sometimes grievous, sometimes joyful, but still very much more introspective piece. And then the last with its like thundering hammer of fate feeling. It's an astonishment that one composer could write these pieces, and yet they all have the stamp of Brahms. They all sound like Brahms, just not at all like the others. Even with Beethoven, you can hear, if you don't know the nine symphonies, you can hear movements from some of them and think they might be from another.
Right.
You know, a movement from the fourth symphony could be a movement from the third or second symphony. It's, but not with Brahms. This is an amazing piece, and the second symphony, it's just such a pleasing sigh of relief. And I think in that sense, it balances the the puts very well, because you have the anxiety of the puts, and then you have the exhale of the Brahms.
One of the things I like about what you just said with Brahms second is that it took him 20-some years to write the first, and then 1 year to write the second.
he got his role, right? He started coming down the hill, snowballing through the symphonic. Brahms is one of my favorite composers. This is a big Brahms month for me, because I'm then 2 days later doing the Brahms B major piano trio, but it's always such a joy. It's just such skillfully crafted music, and yet he never loses the artistic beauty because of the structure. You know, you sometimes have composers like Hindemith sometimes loses the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. You have spectacular structure, spectacular orchestration. Every moment is beautifully crafted and the whole piece just falls flat. Now, there's plenty of Hindemith I love, but with Brahms, that never is the case. Mm-hmm. I don't know any pieces by Brahms where I lose the work. Maybe one of the string quintets sometimes run into trouble there, but everything else, it's just it's such spectacular composition.
On the other hand, Brahms also threw away more than he wrote, so
you don't know what was there.
To hear those pieces that maybe wouldn't work.
Hindemith did publish everything.
Right, he published everything. Did you know that Brahms started a fifth symphony?
I didn't know that.
After the fourth, he had started working on the fifth, and by the time that one had been trashed by his friends, and then it was a failure at the first performance.
What did they know?
The double concerto was also panned. He burned it.
Isn't that funny? Apparently
he wrote one full movement for it.
It's tragic. And listening to this one, the thing that I yearn for even more than a fifth symphony is I wish that he had written a horn concerto.
Oh, yeah.
Because you listen to the end of the first movement.
A 50-minute horn concerto.
Well, and you listen to it and you think, oh, my God, this man just understood how to write horn music with orchestra. Mm-hmm. And I just wish that... that he had, and yet wish all you want.
Yeah, there's the horn trio at least.
There is the horn trio, and there's beautiful writing in the serenades, and there's plenty of beautiful horn music in the symphonies alone, but it's just a shame.
One of those what-if moments you think about.
And clarinet, too.
And Brahms is one of those composers that I think of with that a lot, because we know how much he destroyed.
Absolutely, it might have been there. Yeah. He might have done it and just gotten rid of it.
Yeah, who knows. And so we have a concerto on this program, not a horn concerto. This is a cello concerto.
That's right. Tucked in between this little, and it actually is kind of just a little delicacy thrown in the middle.
Especially with that middle movement.
It's just such kind of like, oh, this is sweet. Mm-hmm. And the Saint-Saëns cello concerto that we're performing, first of all, it's being performed by our principal cellist, Fiona Thompson. And that's always a joy, particularly because Fiona is such a wonderful cellist. But the piece itself it doesn't have the bombast of, say, a Dvorak concerto or Bloch Shlomo, and it doesn't have kind of the perfection of a Haydn concerto. It's just a beautiful, romantic tidbit, and that's not actually doing justice to it. It's a wonderful piece of music, but it's like
saying it's nice.
It doesn't set out to be a major emotional statement. Mm-hmm. It rather sets out to delight an audience for 20 minutes.
It's like some French desserts.
Exactly.
You know, they're just wonderful as part of the meal, but by itself, it's not something to compare to. For
the violin concertos, it's the same thing by Saint-Saëns. And the piano concertos, they're just beautiful, wonderful, lovely kinds of pieces. And again, I think that's going to fit
very
beautifully, very spontaneous, and in fact, beautifully crafted. I mean, this is a piece that it is a piece. I mean, there's no question that it flows as one piece. There's no hodgepodge of composition to this. It has themes that are in every movement, and I'm very excited for it. I've never done this concerto here in Harrisburg, And it's a surefire audience pleaser because it's a lovely, wonderful piece.
And you're also continuing a tradition with performing with a member of the orchestra, which is something great because we have a lot of wonderful performers
we
in the
do.
Orchestra, and it's
yeah.
nice to hear them.
This is now the fifth or sixth season that we've been featuring our players, and every time the audience, at least the audience that has expressed their feelings to me, have left feeling like, why bring anyone in when we've got this here? And that's certainly my feeling. And Fiona is a marvelous player. She's having a marvelous career outside the orchestra. She plays in the Mendelssohn Trio with our associate concertmaster, Peter Sorotin, and his wife, Ya-Ting Chang. And that trio has been hired by Naxos to record all of the Haydn trios. This is a very major thing. And so these are no ordinary players. These are soloists of the very highest caliber. And I'm just thrilled that we're doing it.
I just was reading, Fanfare Magazine's review of their new Mendelssohn Trio recording.
I think
it's on the Centaur label. I'm not
yep,
sure.
Yeah, that I think is right.
But great reviews. And
sure.
It's like, you know, when you read of something like that, you think, oh, you know, musicians from the international set in New York or London or something like that. And they're here. In our area.
Our orchestra. Yeah. You know, and it says so much about the orchestra that we have that players like these, and many players like these, mm-hmm. want to play here.
Right.
They don't have to, but they do. They want to.
And the idea of playing in an orchestra as opposed to playing solo or chamber music is a different mindset, but it's also good for the chops, I mean, as they put it.
It's true. You're going to stay in shape playing programs like the ones we just did and the one we're about to do. It's a lot of notes, a lot of technique, and it's a lot of practicing, but it makes me very grateful. And it also adds a level of fun to it for me and for the orchestra. Generally, I like working with friends, mm-hmm. you know, and Fiona and I have now worked together for 10 very happy years. And the idea that she'll be a soloist, we'll be colleagues in a different way this time, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a joyful experience.
Yeah.
And the orchestra will feel the same way, like, this is one of our own, and not only are we proud of what she's doing, but we are going to rise to our highest level to help her sound as great as she can.
I want to ask you, looking back on it now, with the February concert when you did the Mendelssohn, what was it like conducting this orchestra from the keyboard? I mean, you were facing them, so it was similar to the way you might be looking at them, but your hands were so busy. I mean, I remember one time you're doing a trill in the right hand and you're conducting with the left hand.
Yeah.
But what was it like with having them follow you? Because, I mean, it was like 39 people playing chamber music, or however many were actually in the orchestra.
It was, it was a very complicated emotion, I would say. On the one hand, it was a profound gratitude because to a person, that orchestra really wanted to play well for me. And that said tons.
It was a very tight performance.
Which doesn't always happen in terms of relationships with a conductor and an orchestra. And I've said it before that had I gone out with any number of other orchestras that I can think of, the feeling in the orchestra would have been like, oh God, why are we doing this? And
what does
who
he think
cares?
He's trying to pull off?
Yeah, it's like, let's actually, you know, do what we would do without a conductor, you know, if we
actually,
really needed a conductor.
Heard things like that when they do it with a conductor.
Sure.
It's still not as clean.
And so the fact that they were so focused and so listening to what I was doing it made me extremely grateful. I was very proud of myself. I will say that. This was a big undertaking, and I was very pleased with how it came off. But I think it was also, in a sense, a humbling experience because it's... When you go out and do what these people do regularly, you know, it's easy to make a mistake when you're conducting. No one can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
When you make a mistake playing, it's right there for everyone to hear. And so, you know, I left with a huge admiration for my orchestra and a great deal of personal pride.
And speaking of friends, as you mentioned a couple of days after this concert.
Stewart and Friends, once again, and it's going to be a really interesting, fun
this
concert.
This is a different kind of program, because we normally think of like chamber music being with strings and maybe woodwinds, but
absolutely.
You've got the brass players in the orchestra this time.
Well, in our principal trumpet and principal trombone, we have two great virtuosi. I mean, these are two of the best players that I know on any instrument, and I thought, you know, our Stewart and Friends audience should hear these guys playing in a smaller sphere, in a smaller venue. And so the first half of the program will be music with trombone and trumpet, and it will range from Copland's Quiet City, rescored for piano, trumpet, and trombone. The trombone will play the English horn part. To a work by Phil Snedeker, by our principal trumpet, a movement from a sonata that he wrote. We'll be doing a Carmen suite for piano and trombone, rather than the familiar violin that you've heard. And then a wonderful fandango for the three of us to play. All contemporary. I mean, frankly, you're going to be doing contemporary music for brass instruments.
There's no Mozart trumpet sonata.
Exactly. Unless you're going to go back to Baroque music, there really is nothing. And then the second half of the program, as I said, will be Brahms' first piano trio with Odin Rathnam and Jen DeVore playing cello, because Fiona's playing the concert. So.
You can conduct and play the chamber music program, but
I can't blame her one bit. It's a huge amount, and especially doing all of these Haydn recordings at the same time. And it will be wonderful, and that's the Tuesday after the weekend, so I guess it would be the 20th of April,
and
that's at Whitaker Center.
Whitaker Center, right. Okay.
And people who come to that always have fun. I would love it if, we have very nice crowds for chamber music in Harrisburg, but we always leave feeling like, wow, that was a really special experience, and we'd love it if more people would come.
It's a different kind of performance, because instead of bringing people in, these are our people who are still involved in it. I mean, everybody's part of the community,
it's
part of the orchestra.
Yep.
And it's great that it's an annual tradition.
It has been really
fun
for me, and I think as much fun for the audience, because when you're seeing a chamber music program of people who don't get to play chamber music all the time, you can't leave but feeling happy, because they're so happy. It's a wonderful feeling for me to get to play this kind of music with such wonderful players.
Great. Okay. Well, I think our time is up here. We are going to be talking in May about a concert. I'm looking forward to the Vaughan Williams London Symphony. I think that I've heard it live before, but you don't see it often on a program.
Such a great piece.
And it's a wonderful, gorgeous piece of music. Yep. I mean, the slow movement brings tears to my eyes when I hear it. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Great.
So we'll talk about that, and we've got the new season coming up soon.
That's
everything.
Right.
So stay tuned, as they say.
Thank you, Dick.
Thank you.